All right, please be seated. Second case this morning is Gregory Backus versus Waukesha County, 20 AP 307. Could I have... Good morning. We also have Lakeshore Technical College here this morning. If you could please stand up, we'd like to properly say hello. Oh, well, you're identifiable as well. That's good.
Good for them.
Anyway, welcome. You have paralegals? Uh-huh. Excellent. How long do you have to go? Excellent. I think you'll find the law to be challenging and rewarding. So, welcome. Justice Karofsky will be available to talk with you over the noon hour if you can stick around. She's happy to answer any questions you might have. She can't talk about the case, of course, but she could talk about anything else. So think of some really good questions for her, okay?
Yeah, please.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead and have a seat. We will begin the second case. It's my understanding you have 25 minutes, followed by 30, and 5 minutes in rebuttal. Okay. All right. Let's proceed then.
Good morning. There are three matters before the court today that would need rulings. One is the certified question from the Court of Appeals. The other is Waukesha County's interlocutory appeal, Backus versus Waukesha County, and the third is a matter of briefing Waukesha County's motion to strike portions of the Backus brief. This case comes before the court in a pretrial status. The circuit court denied Waukesha County's motion for partial summary judgment, and the Court of Appeals granted leave for an interlocutory appeal. No decision was made by the Court of Appeals, and this court accepted a certified question. So somewhat a unique procedural posture to the case. Let's begin by the certified question. The Court of Appeals set the question as follows. In light of the Supreme Court's decision in the 118th Street versus DOT decision, is a temporary limited easement compensable under Wisconsin statute section 32096G? Waukesha County answers the question as yes. Why did the Supreme Court perhaps accept the certified question in this case? Waukesha County believes it's to re-examine the assumption made in the prior case of 118th Street as to whether the statute would apply in the case of a temporary easement, and reconsider the points made by the concurring opinion in that case, and the points made regarding perhaps using the rental value rule to value a temporary limited easement as opposed to the fair market value rule. And importantly, to clarify the law in Wisconsin on how we value temporary easements as opposed to permanent easements. I think the real issue before the court is that, the issue of temporary versus permanent regarding easements that are used for highway construction projects. For purposes of the certified question, I think it's best to stick to some of the basic facts in the Backus case, those being that this is the case of a taking of a temporary limited easement only. There was no fee title in land taken from the Backus property. If you look at the award of damages that was issued in this case, it is solely for a temporary limited easement, a small easement, plus or minus 1,300 square feet. 0.032 acres. When we get to the interlocutory appeal that was taken by Waukesha County, we may have to introduce some unique facts. And we will talk about pre-existing permanent easements that were already on the land. But I think for purposes of the certified question, we're looking at the basic facts, the taking of only a temporary limited easement for highway purposes and no land taken. So generally, a temporary easement for highway purposes is the right to enter or occupy the land for construction purposes on a temporary basis. Generally, in highway projects, those easements are removed before the conclusion or at the conclusion of a highway project. In the 118th Street case, this court paused and asked if that statute was designed to apply to temporary limited easements. That's unclear because we don't have legislative history indicating one way or the other, and the words of the statute don't give us any express intention. The statute is general when it talks about easements. As is done in many cases that involve a damage claim, this court in 118th Street looked at causation of those damages and recognized that that needs to be the first test before jumping to a calculation of damages. And it said in 118th Street, which was correct, there has to be causation between the taking or the use of an easement and the damages sought by a landowner.
Counsel, I just want to put a fine point on that comment. So it is temporary limited easement, that has to cause damages, not the project as a whole. Is that correct?
Correct. I think the statute and the court in general looks at what damages were caused by the taking, the consequence of the taking, not the entire project. And that's what the 118th Street Court did. A temporary limited easement was at issue in that case, and the court determined there's a need to look at what damages did that easement cause.
Counsel, do we need to talk at all about how the temporary limited easement fits within an easement that was already on the property?
I think that comes into the interlocutory appeal, and whether or not the circuit court judge gave an appropriate analysis of that when denying the motion for summary judgment. That is the unique case in the Bacchus situation, or the unique fact for Bacchus. I don't think we're going to find that with a lot of temporary easements that are used throughout the state of Wisconsin. That does add an additional argument that the fair market value in this case does not work, because that factor, the pre-existing permanent easement, long ago had a bigger impact on fair market value than this small easement.
Do you agree that this easement that we're discussing today, this temporary limited easement, totally fits within the earlier easement that was already on this property in the same general area?
Absolutely, and there is a diagram that was used before the trial court judge, and it is in the briefing that shows that it fits within the footprint of the prior permanent highway and sidewalk slope easement.
Okay, thank you.
But isn't it a question ultimately for the fact finder as to which easement may have caused the damages that are being claimed in this case?
I think the 118th Street Court said, though, when you look at causation, you look at the new easement. And in this case, I think the trial court erred by not engaging in that analysis, but I think Waukesha County's position is there is no way that a temporary taking that is gone before completion of the project can cause permanent damages to the whole parcel in the after condition.
Well, let's look at the terms of the temporary limited easement, which says it includes the right to operate necessary equipment thereon, the right to preserve, protect, remove, or plant thereon any vegetation that the highway authorities may deem necessary or desirable. So arguably, if, and I believe the allegation here is that a number of very tall, mature trees were either destroyed based on the TLE, or they died off because of work being done pursuant to the easement, that actually is a permanent change. That's the argument on the other side. Yes, the easement itself was temporary, but it caused some permanent damage.
Waukesha County's position is that the lawsuit in Bacchus versus Waukesha County is simply for just compensation caused by the temporary limited easement. And as for damages that may have been caused for landscaping, that can be determined. There will be a trial in this case, and landscaping can be an item of damages in subsections A through G of the statute if shown to exist. So we will have a trial. I think the certified question is focusing instead, though, on how do you measure just compensation, and are you utilizing, in the larger sense, fair market value calculation or the rental value calculation for the TLE in general, not just for those itemized damages of or loss.
And you're advocating that it should be rental value, but that arguably doesn't fit with the damages that are being claimed by Mr. Bacchus.
No, what I'm saying is that the fair market value portion in 32.096G doesn't work for a number of reasons, and therefore can't be used. What the court should do is use the rental value method for a number of other reasons, some of those cited by the court already in the prior decision, and some of those raised in the briefing, and rule that in Wisconsin, temporary easements for highway purposes, the value of those are determined utilizing the rental value.
How would that come?
Then, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Then the remainder of the statute in 32.096G, specifically A through G, applies, so that a landowner still would get any of those damages if shown to exist.
So you're not disputing the fact that if a jury or the fact finder determines that it was the temporary easement that caused damages to the trees, for example, that would be compensable under the statute, if, again, it's proven that the TLE caused those damages.
Exactly. Why did Waukesha County take a TLE in the first place? It already had the right to slope. It already had a 25-foot deep permanent highway and sidewalk slope easement recorded on the subdivision plat years ago. So everyone knew, purchasers knew, the highway was coming, we would need to slope and put in the sidewalk and slope. Why did Waukesha County take a TLE? For construction purposes. There would be a need to go upon the land on a temporary basis. There would be a need to maneuver in that area, and Waukesha County knew it would need to compensate, one, for the use by month that we were on the land, and two, for other items. What if there was fencing? What if there was underground dog fencing? What if there was landscaping or any of those other items in A through G? Waukesha County condemned a temporary limited easement for those purposes, knowing we would be done with the easement at the end of the project. So this is a case where we were willing to take the easement, pay for it just for construction purposes. Remember, no land was needed for the county to build the bypass project. It was already set aside. The boundaries of the Bacchus property did not change. No land was needed. This was so well planned in the future.
I hear you saying that we need to look at the statute and use 6E. How do you get to the rental value? What do you use the statute, or are you relying on more of a common law and looking at our case law to get to value? Assuming, so if you look at 6E and you see that there's nothing, no compensation there, what do you do next?
Well, I'm specifically not looking at 6E because that's severance, and I'm saying
absolutely
not.
No, I'm sorry. And I misspoke. I meant 6G.
What I'm saying is the court has to recognize that the fair market value rule does not work because it's pulling in impacts of the whole project and not just the impact of the TLA. So the court has the authority to say in Wisconsin, because it yields unreasonable results, we don't use it.
Okay, do we have to go that far? Aren't there circumstances where it could work? And I get that those might be really limited, and isn't it not up to us? I mean, the legislature said in the, you know, if you look at 6G, in the case of taking of an easement, and it doesn't specify what kind, the compensation to be paid is, you know, this fair market analysis. Couldn't there be a circumstance where when the, I don't know, something occurred when the land was temporarily taken with the temporary limited easement that did cause some kind of outcome that changed the fair market value? I mean, do you really want us to say it can never apply to a TLE?
Yes, because I think the statute is flexible enough to expand the list of A through G if shown to exist. It's without restriction because of enumeration, so there's always that. Now, one proposal brought forth by the amicus is just to say we're outside 32.09. Just say the rules don't work for this type of easement, and we need to revert to a constitutional or common law analysis. That does work.
So, but otherwise you're saying we're not within E, and therefore we're just generally within 32.09 sub 6.
What I'm saying is the court can acknowledge that the fair market value formula does not work for temporary easements in Wisconsin. It doesn't capture the temporal nature of those easements, and it introduces other factors like impact of the whole project. So we skip that part of the statute.
But if you're just under 6A through G, the 6 starts with in the case of a partial taking of property other than an easement. So how would we, I get what you're saying about whether it fits or not, and it doesn't appear to fit very well, G, but how do you just go right into 6, which makes it kind of clear that we're not supposed to apply that to an easement?
Justice, I'm under 6G in the case of taking of an easement.
She's in 6G.
No, I understand that, but I'm not. Okay, so you want to read 6G to not include the first part, which tells you how you're supposed to get to the fair market value, and then go back to A through G under the last line when you're talking about without duplication with respect to the items of loss or property enumerated in 6A to G.
Yes, I think this court has the authority to say the before and after fair market valuation rule does not work for temporary easements in Wisconsin. Therefore, that portion of the statute shall not be used. Instead, the rental value rule is the most appropriate and shall be used. However, landowners still have the right, as the legislature wrote, for those additional items of loss or value if shown to exist. I think there's value to stay within Chapter 32. The statute
gives...
Isn't
what you're asking us to do really what the legislature ought to be doing? I feel like you're asking us to pick and choose sections of 6G to apply. We're not really supposed to do that. We're supposed to... It feels like you're asking us to make a policy decision.
Well, the concurring opinion in the 118th decision applied rules of statutory interpretation and said we must avoid absurd results. Let me tell you what I think absurd results are if we go with a fair market value analysis with temporary easements. One, it inappropriately brings in impacts of an entire highway project instead of looking at the value of the land or changes to the land covered by the easement. We start hearing about things like four-lane highway, traffic counts, noise level, lack of privacy, proximity of the road or the sidewalk. Those aren't things caused by a temporary easement. We're now looking at impacts of the whole project.
Couldn't we still keep it, and shouldn't we still keep it to what's caused by the temporary easement? I'm not saying all those things come in. We could look at 6G and say there aren't zero damages under 6G, and then maybe we look to see if rental damages or some other type of compensation for taking apply. I mean, I don't think you necessarily just by applying the statute would mean that everything that's related to the project comes in.
Well, I think if you're looking to clarify the law in the state of Wisconsin, saying fair market value equals zero every time is not the preferred way of doing it. I think it's better to say the before and after fair market value rule just doesn't work and it shall not apply.
What's the downside?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Justice Brett.
Is it Justice Brett?
Can't see. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. As I see it, a difference between you and the DOT, although you end up with rental property, damages as a potential, is that it seems the DOT is more consistent with the 118 Street footnote. Footnote 12. That footnote cites to both the Wisconsin Constitution, Article 1, Section 11, and cites to the Pew case. And I read the DOT as relying on Wisconsin Constitution and the Pew case. The Pew case stood for the proposition that the fair market value is not a proper measure of damages and a temporary taking. So why is your approach, although you end up at the same place, better than the DOT approach? It seems like it's awfully close, analytically a little different, and it seems like their approach maybe is more consistent with that footnote citing. And the Pew case was a constitutional taking case under Article 1, Section 13, and said fair market value is not a measure of damages in a temporary taking. So take it away, so to speak.
Waukesha County did...
I get it.
Waukesha County, in this case, did consider this a taking. A temporary taking, not a permanent, but... there was a ability to physically occupy this land for the period or the duration of the project, to be present there, to remove items such as fencing or landscaping and other things. The county views that as more than simply consequential damages due to a highway project or incidental damages, and felt that there should be a taking following the Chapter 32 process, just compensation and payment of appropriate damages.
The Pew case also indicated the trial court correctly noted that fair market value is not the proper measure of damages in the case of a temporary taking. So that dealt with a temporary taking, too. Yeah.
And Waukesha County, before the trial court, would have conceded to pay the rental value of damages. We're trying to avoid what the concurring opinion was getting at in 118th Street. Interpret the statute to avoid absurd results.
Well, I'm advancing that maybe you interpret the statute consistent with the Wisconsin Constitution. Both the footnote and the concurrence obviously indicate that Article 1, Section 11 is informing any statutory interpretation. It's the umbrella over which the statutory interpretation is made. And it came up with its decision, after great analysis and thinking, I'm sure, with the premise that I just announced.
The approach by the amicus DOT is not unreasonable. It could be viewed outside of Chapter 32 if the court says there is no rule within that statute that addresses temporary easements, so we need to go outside of the statutes. That's not unreasonable to take that view. Slightly differs from what I'm trying to argue, that perhaps we can stay within the statutes. It's not unreasonable at all, because it does say let's look at rental value, which appears to be the most commonly used valuation method for temporary easements.
Yes, I'm trying to think of what paradigm of analysis I were going to use, regardless of who prevails, and I was just wondering why one over the other. But thank you for your comment. One follow-up question. I think it was in the certification, correct me if I'm wrong, that indicates that there is now another lawsuit by Mr. Backus for inverse condemnation and sloping damages or grading damages. Is that correct?
Yes. So my light's on. May I finish the question?
You may answer the question.
There is, and we did supplement the record to show that. My opponent will say that perhaps the court took this case to look at the issue of sloping within a temporary easement, and to say that this case will show it's really not about a temporary easement, it's edging towards a permanent taking, that the county says it only took a permanent easement, but it really took land or permanent takings through the sloping. What this court said in 118th Street is, even if a highway project results in damages that are compensable under a particular statute, those damages cannot be recovered in a claim brought under the wrong statute. And my point being, there are other lawsuits subsequently filed. This case has been pending 2 years on appeal already. They have been filed for change of grade and inverse condemnation, and those are the proper forums to look at terms of that permanent easement. Were they violated? What was the sloping? What was the change of grade, etc.? The matter before this court is simply just compensation for the taking of a temporary easement. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Andrew Weininger, and I represent Gregory Backus. Our position in this matter can be summarized into three main points. The first is that in this case, there was a permanent physical invasion of Mr. Backus's property. That's a taking. That's the Olin case, that there was a permanent physical invasion. The second main point is that as a result of the taking, the compensation due to Mr. Backus is the before value minus the after value, assuming completion of the project. That has been the law in Wisconsin for over 100 years. That's the Sheely case, and it moves all the way up to present day with 3209 6G. The third main point of our case is whether the county can avoid paying just compensation for the taking by calling it something that it's not, by calling it temporary. But the taking in this case, what they did was they took an easement, which allowed them to install a highway bypass partially on my client's property. The Olin case, which is cited in our brief, explains that the embankment is a permanent taking. The circuit court, when it issued its ruling in this matter, had the engineering plans. It had the affidavit from Mr. Backus explaining that there is, in fact, a permanent embankment. The bypass was constructed on Mr. Backus's property. And the county says that, no land was needed for the bypass project. That's simply not true. The bypass itself was constructed on Mr. Backus's property. The Court of Appeals certification makes clear that that's the case, that it was, in fact, constructed on Mr. Backus's property.
And, counsel, where is that in the certification, that the bypass was constructed on Mr. Backus's property?
Apologies. It's within the background on page 2. It states the completed project includes a slope of land leading down from the sidewalk onto Backus's property, and then it continues the westernmost portion is on Backus's property. Thus, some of Backus's backyard is now sloped as it was not prior to the project. The county has disputed our calculation. At no point have they disputed that the bypass was in fact constructed on Mr. Backus's property. The engineering plans show the bypass. It's a severe slope that's supported by Mr. Backus's affidavit. So there was a permanent physical invasion. That's a taking. And so the taking is not what the county says it took. The taking is not what the TLE that the county claims to have taken. The taking is a term of art that has been used in Wisconsin for over 100 years, and many of the cases have been cited in the briefs, and the one that I think most concisely explains it is the Sheely case, and it explains the word taking involves these items of damages, namely the value of the property taken and the damage to the residue. So it's the value of the property taken, so the property that's taken here, the embankment, that's the Olin case, the embankment, plus damages to the residue as a result of the project. And the Blesch case explains you can't just look at the 6 inches, you have to look at the entire project. So you don't just look at the part of the project that was built on the property, you have to look at the entire project and consider that impact on the property. And that has continued in Wisconsin from the 1800s all the way up to present day, and that's 3209 6 and 6G, which explain essentially what Sheely says, that it's the before value minus the after value, assuming completion of the project.
So aren't you talking about the easement that was part of the platement of the subdivision, and it was called the 25-inch highway and sidewalk slope easement for future construction? And isn't that what you're talking about affords the sloping and all of the other parts that you've described, as opposed to what the Waukesha County characterizes what we're here about today, which is the temporary limited easement for purposes of putting, constructing the highway project?
Respectfully, the county abandoned any claim to proceed under that easement. That's a red herring in this case.
Under which easement?
The sloping easement that was on the plat. The county acquired a easement under Chapter 32 of the Wisconsin statutes, and that easement is what allowed them to proceed with the project. The easement was taken for the highway bypass project. They didn't proceed under this sidewalk and slope easement. And to the extent it has any relevance in this case at all. I would build on what Justice Bradley hinted at. It would, to the extent it impacted the before value of the property, that would be a consideration for the jury. That's the Fields case, where you consider all of the property attributes in the before condition and all of the property attributes in the after condition. But if the county wanted to proceed under that easement, they could have. The easement was to the city, not to the county. If they wanted to somehow go through that other easement, they could have, but they just, quite frankly, did not. They proceeded under Chapter 32 in this case. And what Chapter 32 makes clear, well, it's Chapter 32 in the Constitution. There has to be a public purpose. The public purpose in this case was the bypass project. The bypass project was constructed on Mr. Backus's property. And 3209, the rules governing determination of just compensation, state that in all matters involving the determination of just compensation in eminent domain proceedings, the following rules shall apply. So we fall under Chapter 32. And so getting back to the taking, it's there was some mention of 118th Street. Obviously, that's at the forefront of this court's and the attorney's minds. It's what 118th Street said and how that case was decided was identifying what the project is. How did the project impact the property? And what the court in 118th Street said was there were two separate projects, and the DOT made that very clear. There was the relocation of 118th Avenue, which was done under the police power, and then a totally separate project for the reconstruction of a driveway. And part of the court's decision in 118th Street was that it actually, the eminent domain taking actually benefited the property, that they reconstructed the driveway, and there was this separate project. So it was two separate issues. Here, we have a taking for eminent domain for the bypass project. The bypass was constructed on Mr. Backus's property, and the rule in Wisconsin is that when that happens, it's the before value minus the after value, and assuming completion of the project. And so 3209-6G is the proper statute to apply in this case. It truly would, to build on another thing that Justice Bradley said during the other oral argument, was it would really take the court rewriting the law. And there's... Sorry, I apologize.
No, finish your sentence.
I was just going to say there's clear legislative intent that for 6G, in the case of taking an easement, that's what applies to 6G. And then for 6, it specifically says doesn't apply to easements.
You've repeatedly used the phrase, the bypass project was constructed on Backus's property, and pointed as confirmation of that statement to page 2 of the certification of the Court of Appeals. I'm not sure I'm in accord with your interpretation that what they set forth on page 2 is tantamount to your statement, but maybe it's a matter of semantics, so I'll let that go. My question really goes to footnote 3 on the certification, and it touches upon a concern of mine. That is the state of the record. This is an interlocutory appeal. You know, we got a bit of room to go yet on this one, don't we, counsel? And footnote 3 says that at times Backus appears to acknowledge that the issue on appeal as being about a TLE, you know, temporary limited easement, at times asserts that the county has taken a permanent easement because of the sloping, and at times asserts the county took the portion of his property because of the sloping. Which more accurately describes your position, That's my first question. I will continue reading the end of that footnote. Neither the record nor argument before the circuit court or us is sufficiently developed on the issue of whether there has been a taking of Backus's property or a permanent easement. So I'm concerned about the development of the record, but first of all, I want to know what more correctly characterizes your position in this lawsuit.
Our position right now and has always been that the bypass was constructed on Mr. Backus's property. That was set forth in our response to the motion for summary judgment. We provided the affidavit from Mr. Backus that talks about the steep slope that goes directly into his backyard.
Okay, and so in the words, I just want to fit it in here. Are you saying that the issue on appeal is about a temporary limited easement? Is that your position? Is that the issue on appeal?
The issue on appeal is the taking.
Is the issue on appeal that there has been a permanent easement?
There certainly was a permanent. The easement itself has been released. Mm-hmm. What's left is a permanent embankment. So our position is that now the property is part of the bypass was constructed on that's a permanent taking.
Okay, so I understand, although I'd like it to fit into the words that I'm asking, I take it that your position now is that this is not a TLE, this is not a permanent easement, but rather the county actually took a portion of the property because of the sloping. Is that what you're advancing now?
Yes, that's the Olin case, that an embankment is a permanent taking.
So we wouldn't be in 6G at all? Because that statute is for the case of the taking of an easement, and you're saying it's a taking and it's not an easement.
They took an easement, and the easement allowed them to install the bypass on my client's property. So it would fall under 6G. The easement language specifically states that it gives them the right to construct a highway project. They used that easement to construct the highway project on Mr. Backus's property. It's shown on the engineering plans, and so it would fall under 6G, and then 6G references back to 6G.
And which easement is this? This is the temporary easement to get construction equipment there.
They acquired, via an award of damages under Chapter 32, an easement to construct the highway project.
Okay, but that seems to be separate from the taking, which is what you're saying. Putting construction equipment is not the taking of the slope. They seem to be two separate things, right?
They took an easement. Our position is they took an easement. It allowed them to perform work and install the bypass on. So what Wisconsin law instructs us to do is to look at what the taking is. And the taking is the land that's taken. So that's the embankment that was actually built on Mr. Backus's property. And also consider the impact of the project on the remaining property. That's the Sheely case. It's what the land that's lost in the easement, and also the impact of the project on the remaining property.
So the taking of a temporary easement can result in permanent changes detrimental to the value of a property.
That's what it was used for here. They called it a temporary easement, and they used it to install the bypass on Mr. Backus's property. They've called it temporary, but they used it to permanently change Mr. Backus's property and install the bypass on his property.
So the only thing that was temporary was the accessing of the property, but the work that was done, again, this is all going to be decided by the fact finder, arguably caused permanent changes, a permanent taking of the property.
Correct.
But a temporary limited easement is for the purpose of temporarily occupying the land. What was being built seems to me to be something separate and apart, and you may still have recourse for that taking, but lumping it together with the mechanism for building a highway project. I mean, that means every temporary limited easement would result in potentially huge amounts of damages, because any time they needed to use a piece to do something else, everybody would be responsible for the end result of everything. Why would anyone ever want to take a temporary easement?
Well, that gets back to the third point, is it just has to do with whether they can call it temporary and do permanent actions on someone's property. realistically, this should have been a fee taking. They should have acquired it. They didn't, and instead they took what they called a temporary easement to build the bypass on his property. Typically, when they build bypasses on people's property, they take that property. And we...
Right, but again, isn't there a little bit of a conflating going on here? I mean, there's a whole issue of when they built, what they built on your client's property, and whether they did take it for the purposes of changing the slope. But the actual ability to just put equipment on your property that may result in damages and may need to be compensated, I mean, does need to be compensated for, it's not may, but that temporary nature is then over. And that's just, like, that's just the equipment being on there. That's not the other piece that may or may not have changed your land.
There's a temporary aspect to it, but there's also a permanent taking in this case that they installed the bypass on Mr. Backus's.
And you want to put those two together instead of saying that those two are separate.
The reason that they could do it was the easement that they acquired. The easement allowed the construction of the bypass, and they built the bypass on Mr.
The terms of the temporary easement are really important here, right? Justice Dallet seems to be suggesting that a rule we might adopt in this case would apply to all temporary easements, but that's not true, right? We have to look at what the easement took or what the easement did. Of course, there's many temporary easements that would not result in a permanent injury to the land or damage to the land or a taking of the land, but the express terms of this TLE, as I read them, do contemplate the removal. Again, I'm using this as the most obvious example, the removal of landscaping, vegetation, plants, trees in this case, correct?
Correct. That's another permanent change that we haven't talked much about. There's the embankment, there's the removal of trees, the rocks and stone that was filled in. And it gets back to the Zinn case. The Zinn case says it goes by what actually happens, not by what the government or municipality says that is supposed to happen. So in this case, yes, they've repeatedly said it's temporary, they've said it's gone away, but what's left is the bypass that was constructed on Mr. Backus's property.
But isn't that the nature of your inverse condemnation claim, in that you're saying you took it, you should have paid us for it, you didn't take it. For whatever reason, you didn't join that in this action and now have another action filed. But I think what counsel is trying to separate out is the claims that were made here and the claims that were made there, and I don't think that there's any fuss by opposing counsel that if there was a taking, inverse condemnation then lies for the taking and you filed such a lawsuit. I find this case very interesting because there already was a slope on it, and I think when you get to damages, wherever you get it, here or in the next action, and more likely in the next action if you're going to be looking at a taking through inverse condemnation, you're going to have problems with the easement that's already there that permitted the DOC to change the slope and put a sidewalk in, and it was there when your client bought the property, and the easement we're talking about totally fits within it. So you're going to have a problem showing that the damages were caused by the temporary easement rather than the one that was already on the property.
Respectfully, once again, if they couldn't use, they needed to use eminent domain to build the bypass, and they acquired the easement from Backus for that purpose, so they couldn't use the sloping easement. They abandoned.
Why? It was already there. It was for the construction of the highway. That's why it was put on there.
Otherwise, they couldn't have used eminent domain in this case. Eminent domain can only be used for a public purpose, and the public purpose in this case was to construct the bypass.
They had a public purpose, and what is being argued to us is that it was a public purpose that was limited by time. That was the public purpose. And you certainly can, I mean, I think that there's not much of a fuss from the other side that a limited temporary easement is compensable. Okay, and so that's what they say they've got, and that's what they want to compensate your client for in this action. But I don't think they're saying you can't get compensation for a taking if you have an action for inverse condemnation, which I understand has already been filed.
And it has. It's been filed in an abundance of caution. And when we did file that other lawsuit, the response from the county was, wait a second, there's already a just compensation case going on. And all of the issues that you brought up in this inverse condemnation case, they need to be brought in this Backus case, the circuit court case for the just compensation that's already being litigated.
Well, you know, there are a lot of things you can do. You can always try to combine them if you're, that's down the road. That's not for us to worry about.
Well, we did try to combine it. The county opposed that, and they're trying to create a situation where Backus isn't compensated for this permanent taking. That's quite clearly what, because when, in this case, they say, go file another case. We file the other case in an abundance of caution, and when we do that, they answer, and they say, no, wait a second, this all has to go into the just compensation case. And I'd submit to this court that the most straightforward and appropriate approach is to just apply the terms of 3209-6G that clearly apply here, and all the taking and all of the damages resulting from the taking are resolved through 3209-6G, not splitting this off into separate different issues. They would all be resolved under 3209.
So are you seeking any damages for a temporary easement?
Our appraiser, he included the before and after value, and he also included a nominal amount for the rental rate, because there was a temporary aspect to the easement, and there's also the permanent change.
If we were to decide this case is only about the temporary easement, what are the damages for that?
I don't think the court can decide it on that, because the law in Wisconsin is that it goes by what the taking is, and the taking is what the land that's taken, the trees, the embankment, the stones that were installed on Mr. Backus's property, plus the damages to the residue, to the remaining property.
Do I have the facts right? There was a previous easement saying basically, landowner, heads up, this project is coming somewhere down the road for these 5 miles, right?
There was a, on the subdivision plat, there was a, it was called a sidewalk and slope easement. There were no terms to the easement. It was to the city. It really is a red herring in this case, and it has to do with it's very similar to the Fields case, and when ATC will acquire an easement for a new project, and what the court has held is that you consider, to the extent there was any impact on value in the before condition, it would be something that would be attributed to the before condition, and here the county needed the temporary easement to complete the project. The project is the bypass, and the bypass was installed on Mr. Backus's property. So it's one inseparable whole. We're not talking about the situation from 118th Street where it's kind of these two separate projects.
I thought that the permanent easement was transferred to the county by the city. At least that's what I read in some of the briefs. I didn't try to track it down, but that's what was represented to the court.
Sure. The reality is the county just didn't go under that easement. We're not here. The facts before this court are not that the county.
But you may get there when you get to trial, though, so it might be important to know.
I'm just trying to figure out the facts. I thought this was a temporary easement case and what damages come from a temporary easement. I see you wanting to make it more than that and damages for the whole. But I thought before the bypass project, there was a recorded easement at the rear of this particular property. Is that correct or not?
What's correct is the plat said something about a sidewalk and slope easement. It doesn't have any specific terms, and the county didn't go forward under that easement. So they used eminent domain. They needed the easement for the highway project in this case, and when that happens.
I'm just trying to, I get your argument. You're really good at it.
Sure.
I'm just trying to figure out the facts. Do you disagree that there was a recorded easement at the rear of this subject property that was before the bypass project?
I would agree that there's a subdivision plat and something to that effect was, but we don't even know what it means. It wasn't something that was brought up at the circuit court level.
So there's an issue as to whether there ever was a recorded easement at the rear of this property.
Certainly, the effect of what if any effect that had, and then.
Parse the words she's using. She's not using the effect. She's asking you, was there a recorded easement? The answer to that is yes or no.
No.
You said there was no recorded easement?
There was a subdivision plat. There was not a record.
On the subdivision plat, there was no recorded easement?
There was just a subdivision plat that showed the Backus property.
That's an issue. So we've got three potential issues. Whether or not there's an easement before the project ever commenced. Whether there's a temporary easement to allow the property to actually happen, you know, getting the trucks on, getting things done, being able to actually build the project. And then whether there's a permanent taking post-project.
I don't want to sound like a broken record. Respectfully, I don't think if the county intended to go through some other type of easement, whether it be a sidewalk and slope easement or some other type of thing, they could have, theoretically, but they didn't. They acquired an easement through eminent domain, and that easement allowed them to construct a highway project, and that highway project was constructed on Mr. Backus's property.
There is never compensation for a recorded easement before the bypass project.
No, there's the only thing, and it wasn't brought up at the circuit court, and it's certainly not developed. I don't even know if it's in the record, to be quite honest. There was a subdivision plat, and it showed, but the county went through the eminent domain process and acquired. So this 32.
The county, as far as you know, or as in this record, has paid zero for this easement.
It's not in the record. It was included on the subdivision plat. And there's been no claim by the county. The county didn't attempt to go under that other, to the extent that's another easement, they didn't attempt to go through that.
So as far as you're concerned, the question of whether or not and how we define temporary easement and what damages, if any, are available for that under 6G is not even an issue.
The concerns that were expressed in 118th Street are just not, this isn't the case to address those concerns. I
agree with you that the facts are different. Having said that, you don't see this as a temporary limited easement case at all.
I see it as a case where they did acquire what they claim to be a temporary easement. So what happens when they say one thing and then they install make a permanent change to a property. What happens in that situation? I'd submit that 3206G very clearly.
Are you giving up the right to claim damages for when, in order to construct a permanent taking, whatever you want to call it, that the landowner has no right for the occupation of the property on a temporary basis to build that thing? I would think you'd want both.
Yeah, it's both. It's both, and it's allowed for under 3209 sub 6. 3209 sub 6G references back to 3209 6A through G, and I'd submit to the court that 3209 6E allows for the temporary aspects of a taking. So here there was certainly a temporary aspect of using the property, and then part of the area in the easement was permanently changed. And so both apply, the statute works, it applies, it would take, it really would create a situation if this court were to find that it's only the rental rate, it would allow the municipality to call it one thing, to take an easement to allow for the construction of something like a highway bypass, to permanently change property, and then to just say, well, you only get the rental rate because we said it was temporary. Well, here it's a permanent change. They permanently put the embankment in the backyard. And so that's the facts in this case. There could be other facts, but it's basically that's really what the case comes down to. They called it temporary, but what it actually is anything but temporary. It's a permanent embankment directly into Mr. Backus's property.
But the questions before this court at this stage are quite narrow. The first question is whether a temporary limited easement is compensable under 3209 sub 6G. The parties agree that a TLE is compensable, but you disagree over what the measure of compensation would be. Do you agree with that?
And that's what Judge Boren ruled, was that it's 3209 6G does apply, and that it's then there's issues of fact, and the jury then ultimately determines the before value and the after value, assuming completion of the project.
Which brings us to question two, which is before this court, which is whether Waukesha was entitled to summary judgment on the issue of damages. Judge Boren said he denied the summary judgment, so we're just reviewing his denial of that summary judgment motion as to whether it complies with the law. Is that accurate?
Yes, and my red light is flash. Can I answer?
Well, I thought yes was the answer, but I'll give you a sentence or two if you need it.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel, your opposing counsel in part advances an argument that I will reduce to its essence of bait and switch. You say you're doing one thing and you're really doing another. Can you respond to that?
Yes, that's why I think it's so important that we go back and look at the trial court record in this case. It comes as an interlocutory nature, and there is a need to clarify the law. This week actually marks 2 years since the Court of Appeals granted the interlocutory appeal. It's interlocutory because there are two circuit courts in my county that have neighboring properties here. One court ruled, the case in the Bacchus case, that it's proper to allow all evidence of damages, fair market value, severance, proximity, everything to go before the jury. The other court said, no, that's not appropriate in the case of a temporary limited easement. We should only look at what is caused by the easement on the portion of the property that was covered by the easement, and granted the motion for summary judgment to exclude evidence of severance or proximity damages. So that's where we're at with the interlocutory appeal. We have to stick with the trial court record. In 2 years, there has been advanced a number of theories of these cases. We have inverse condemnation lawsuits filed on all five of these related cases. And that's the appropriate forum to say, hey, the government should have condemned more and taken more for the project and paid more. That's where you get this argument, it should have done something permanently. We dispute that the bypass was built on the Bacchus land through this TLE. It's a correct forum to allege that in inverse condemnation. Examine the rights under the highway and slope easement. Examine the type of embankment, the type of slope, what was in the engineering plans, what was actually built. That's for a different court to determine. And just to tie in, that's the nature of my motion to strike portions of the brief. I recognize that's an unusual request before this court, but that's my effort to say things have grown, and pleadings in that other lawsuit have now become alleged to be parts of this record before the trial court, and we need to separate that because it's a distraction in the case before this court. This is just the temporary limited easement case. Go back and look at what was before the judge at the time of the motion for summary judgment. Go back and look at the pretrial reports that were filed just days later. Look at the jury instructions that are proposed. Nothing mentions slope, grading, permanent takings, anything. So that's why it's important to keep this in context of truly before the trial judge, when we argued these motions for summary judgments, it was only a discussion of what's the proper method for dealing with a temporary limited easement. How do we grapple with the causation issue that the 118th Street opinion brought forth? And how do we deal with severance, the county saying a temporary taking can never cause a severance to a property? So the county is saying that this discussion that the court just had demonstrates why we need to go through the causation test, why we have to separate out what happened with this project, what did a temporary taking cause, not the impact of the whole project. Let's lump all these easements in together and say what was the total impact over time to this property. It's important to go through that separation.
But this court, again, is not the fact finder. We're not sitting here to decide in this case which easement, the platted easement or the TLE, which caused the damages. We're simply to decide in this case what those damages could be if they're proven up at trial. In other words, what legally, what damages are available if he proves his case. That's it, right?
Yes. May I finish my thought?
Yes, in a sentence or two.
So what is before the court is the method for valuing these easements, and what becomes an unreasonable result with the fair market value in disproportionate dollar amounts for small takings. $90,000 in a change of fair market value for an easement that's 1,300 square feet. Think of the cost of construction. Taxpayer dollars. We're looking at $90,000 just to construct the project. That's not land costs. Think of that times five of these cases for Waukesha County, or the extent of it for the DOT with the state. These are just construction costs of a highway. That's unreasonable.
All right,
thank you.
Interesting oral argument briefing. The court will adjourn. We will convene in closed conference at 1:30.